This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast. We are going well off the beaten path today to talk about trail running. Can trail running fit into a triathlete lifestyle? And if so, how do we fit it into our triathlete lifestyle? We'll find out from two of our TriDot coaches who are no strangers to running off-road. Our first guest is professional triathlete and TriDot coach Elizabeth James. Elizabeth is a USAT Level 2 and Ironman U certified coach who quickly rose through the triathlon ranks using TriDot, from a beginner to top age grouper to a professional triathlete. She is a Kona and Boston Marathon qualifier who has coached triathletes with TriDot since 2014. Elizabeth, happy trails to you.
Well, thanks a lot, because now I'm going to have that song in my head all day.
Happy trails to you.
But I guess, you know, happy trails to you too. Glad to be here.
I apologize to everybody for me making you listen to me sing there for a second. Also joining us today is the Ultraman himself, TriDot coach Jason Verbrecken. Better known as Coach Verby, Jason lives in San Diego, California, where he works as a Pepsi sales manager, in addition to coaching TriDot athletes and motocross athletes. He has been racing tries for 7 years, racking up 9 Ironman, 1 Ultraman, and 7 extreme triathlon finishes in that time. Hey, Verby, it is trail running day on the podcast, and you just had a pretty epic trail run yourself. What race did you just finish a few weekends back?
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I went out for a little run a couple of weeks ago, a 100-miler Hurt 100, so had a great time doing it. Was an unbelievable experience.
Just a little run out there. Yeah, 100 miles, no big deal.
Did it live up to its name as the Hurt 100?
It definitely hurt. I can emphasize that. Yes, it hurt tremendously.
All right. Well, I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation today about trail running for triathletes, and then wind things down with our cool down, where Vanessa will interview a TriDot coach to get a training tip. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it. Before we get too deep into the show today, I want to give a shout out to our good friends at UCAN. Here at TriDot, we are huge believers in using UCAN to fuel our training and racing. In the crowded field of nutrition companies, what separates UCAN from the pack is the science behind Live Steady, the key ingredient in UCAN products. While most energy powders are filled with sugar or stimulants that cause a spike and crash, UCAN energy powders, powered by Live Steady, deliver a steady release of complex carbs to give you stable blood sugar and provide long-lasting energy. I personally fuel my workouts with the orange-flavored Edge Gel and the unflavored UCAN Energy Powder. Between their energy mix, energy bars, almond butter, and more, there is definitely a Live Steady product that you will love. So head to their website, UCAN.co, and use the code TRIDOT to save 20% on your entire order. Now, that code used to be 10%, but the fine folks at UCAN have upped it to 20% for TriDot Nation. So once again, that's UCAN.co, promo code TriDot.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Triathletes are usually a pretty adventurous bunch, so chances are a good portion of our audience has run, camped, or hiked along some spectacular stretches of trails. As our warm-up question today, what was a specific trail that you explored in some way that was just extra awesome to you? Elizabeth James.
I'm going to go with a trail that is in Chicala, Mexico. And there is this extinct volcano. I'm probably going to botch the name of it, but it's like the Duranavana. And it's located just south of the town of Chicala. And you can take the trail from the beach right up to the dormant crater. And this was quite an excursion. So I went with a group of about 8 other women. We had taken paddle boards earlier that morning from one of the beaches in Chicala to a nearby cove. And then we had gotten on a boat from the beach that we paddleboarded to access the trailhead. And this is probably one of the times that I have been most scared. As we're on the boat, the water is just super violent, and we have to take off our shoes, put them in our dry bags, jump off the boat, like swim over to the shore. It is just so many like big jagged rocks. Wow. And so you're trying to like not get smashed into the rocks as you are trying to access the shore. But once we got past that part, we had this just beautiful hike up to the dormant crater. And then we're able to kind of go up and over and then down to another beach on the other side. And that was just an awesome trail. Scary at the time, but epic memories of just that whole excursion.
Yeah, like sometimes those moments, in the moment, they're a little hairy, but then you get on the other side and you're like, man, that was so fun. I can't wait
you're
to
like,
do it again.
That was epic. Yeah, what a good story.
Coach Verby, you've raced all over the world. What is this answer for you? What is a specific stretch of trail that just really stood out for you?
The one that stuck out in my head is a local trail down here in Southern California. It's called San Gorgino Mountain. It goes up to 11,500 feet, and I had never been on it before, and I saw, you know, following some people on Strava, I saw them hiking it, and I just said, hey, I want to go out and try that trail. So just kind of pretty much packed up my stuff, and it was 20 miles round trip. It has like 6,000 feet of gain, and I had no idea where I was going. Just packed up my running bag and hit that trail, and just was off on the adventure by myself, just exploring. You know, you start running and your little streams hidden in the mountain and the views. It's just one of these adventures I just went on by myself and had the most fun just exploring and checking out, and had, you know, nothing, no specific training in sight. Just go out and explore that trail and have fun. And it's, you know, I still remember it to this day.
Great story there, Jason. For me, this answer, my wife and I did a Banff National Park in Canada vacation a few years ago. It was an extremely memorable vacation, a lot of really, really cool things that we did. Some great hiking, obviously, in the Canadian Rocky Mountains. The one particular trail, Johnston Canyon to Inkpots, is the name of it. And it takes you just through some beautiful, like almost like this little like gorge canyon. And there's just a beautiful, like light see-through, light blue glacial water just running below you. A few waterfalls to see along the way. And then as you get away from the waterfalls and away from the crowds, you kind of get up into the mountains and go up and down a little bit. And that hike ends in this area where there's like some really cool, they're called the Inkpots. And it's kind of some like thermo, you know, I'm totally botching these science terms, but it's like some geothermal activity. And so there's like some little mud pits that you can look at. But it drops you off in like this field where just every direction you look, there's just like white capped mountains. It was the perfect fit for the perfect day. And that's what I'm going to give a shout out to, Johnston Canyon to Inkpots Trail in Banff National Park. We're going to throw this question out to our audience. So make sure you're a member of the I Am Tridot Facebook group. I'm going to pose this question on the Monday this show comes out. From all the hiking, adventuring, exploring you have done on trails around the world, what was a specific stretch of trail that was extra memorable for you? Let us know.
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Hey folks, TriDot is currently running the 2024 edition of our annual research project that we call the Preseason Project. We are looking for non-TriDot athletes who want to jump into the research project this year. Qualifying athletes get 2 free months of TriDot training. It is literally 2 months of the best training available in exchange for TriDot getting to analyze the training data that comes in from those sessions. I started training with TriDot during the 2018 preseason project and immediately took a liking to the structured training schedule, and I started seeing huge improvements in my swim, bike, and run. Even once the 2-month research project was over, I committed fully to TriDot training and have used it for everything from local sprints to my very first Ironman. I'm fitter and faster than I've ever been, and more importantly, I'm enjoying my races, the sport, and the triathlon community much more than before. I also have a podcast now, but that is a different story for a different day. If you are already training with TriDot, now is the best time to invite your Tri friends to participate in the preseason project. And if you are a podcast listener and have never given our training a try, use the link in the description for today's show to see if you qualify. as a triathlete, you can certainly knock out your training on the track. You can knock out your training just around town. You can find a good park pathway, or you can go off the beaten path and do your running on some trails. And it's a nice way to mix it up. It adds a little variety. But as triathletes, we have to be careful about when we do this, how we do this, how often we do this. And that's where Coach Furby and Coach EJ are here to give us some guidance. So my first question for the two of you today when it comes to trail running is when did you get hooked on trail running in the first place? You're both very familiar with trail running, and I know there had to be a point where you first fell in love with it in the first place. So give me your fall in love with trail running story, Coach Furby.
I can't even really say when I fell in love with trail running. I can just remember being at a young age, being in love with trails. Wow. And you know, being in the car with my parents and seeing like motor dirt bikes and quads on the side of the road on trails and watching them go up and down hills and where that trail went off to in the winter, seeing snowmobile tracks and seeing the trail go into the woods. And from a young age, that trails, any kind of trails, just always fascinated me, going, if I take that trail, I'm going to get into some fun adventure and just let my imagination go crazy and have a, you know, amazing time.
Yeah, it's so funny, Jason, that's kind of your memory, because like I remember when I was younger, like we didn't run trails, like we hiked all the time. And I specifically, like my family, we would go camping, and specifically my uncle and cousin across the street from me growing up, my cousin Brandon is a huge trail runner, and growing up we hiked all the time. And we would do like multi-night kind of stuff, but at some point Brandon realized, oh, you can run these things instead of just hike them. And so now it's like, that's all he does is run trails. And so when I go trail running, it's with my cousin Brandon, just tagging along with him, trying to keep up. Elizabeth, what is this answer for you? When did you kind of first realize, oh, trails are out there and I can run on them?
I do have more of a distinct time frame. For me, I fell in love with trail running when I was a camp counselor. So I worked at a summer camp for 4 summers after high school and throughout college. And the campgrounds were just beautiful. Expansive, had a great trail system. And as a cabin counselor, we would take the kiddos hiking. But in the morning, when the kiddos were still asleep, some of us staff members would get up real early, run the trails. And that's what did it for me. Just beautiful, peaceful, I mean, but challenging. I mean, you start off in the dark and get to watch the sunrise. And it was just, it's like magical out there. I mean, we talk about adventure. I mean, to me, those two phrases, like an adventure and magical, kind of come to mind when I think of trails.
Just kind of tell us as triathletes. I think most of us are more immersed in triathlon culture, and we have our own vibe that's even different from roadrunners. What makes the trail runner vibe a little bit different, and how can we show up to these events not looking totally like a fish out of water, Elizabeth?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say here is like, even if you do show up looking like that fish out of water, the trail running community is amazing and so welcoming. They are so supportive. So if you show up looking a little bit like, yep, this is my first rodeo out here on the trails, I can almost guarantee that you will have people there to welcome you and offer help, support, and advice. Because even if you're sticking out a little bit, like, they want you to be a part of it and are excited to see you there. And I think that's one of probably the greatest things that I've found about the trail running community is just the openness that they have for everybody and the support that they show to all runners that show up. Now, if you do prefer to not be, you know, that person and look like the fish out of water, show up and feel like you know a little bit more about
what
you're doing.
I like to blend in myself. I like to blend in. I like to not look like a tourist when I'm traveling somewhere new. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll offer those tips as well. I think one of the first things that I always offer as a piece of advice for people looking to get into trails is that it's recommended to start with a shorter distance. You know, go to the track, you know, out on the paths, no big deal. Like you've got that down, but take it to the trails and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, like this is a different venue. Trail running can be much more physically demanding than road running, just depending on the terrain that you're there and facing. So don't expect to go out and just tackle a marathon distance trail race if you've only trained on the roads. I would definitely recommend starting with shorter distances and then building that up, just because the terrain is different and therefore the demands on the body are different. You know, along with that, starting to learn some very specific trail techniques for, you know, using a little bit of a shorter stride or focusing on lifting your feet a little bit more can be important because of the different obstacles with the rocks and the roots that you might be facing.
So yeah, Elizabeth, great point there. And I actually, when I used to coach a junior triathlon team, whenever we were working on run form, I had a lesson I would do every single year in the summer where I would actually take them, instead of practicing at the park near the triathlon shop where I coached from, I would take them to some of the local trails because it was a great lesson on cadence. And hey, notice that when you're running these trails, you just automatically by default are going to start shortening that stride. You're going to pick up your cadence. You're going to take smaller, quicker steps to adjust for the environment. And I literally use the changes of terrain from the paths to the trail to kind of point out, oh, look at what you're naturally doing, and kind of introduce them to the concept of different cadences, different stride lengths. So that was Coach Andrew used to use that in a clever way with the kiddos.
I think one of the other things too is just a little bit on the gear and attire. And I'm sure that Coach Verby can jump in here and give us a little bit of extra color as well. But trail running sometimes uses different gear. There's trail shoes. Those are going to have more aggressive tread. A lot of runners will use a hydration pack as well. Just because, you know, there isn't necessarily the availability of gas stations or water fountains when you're out in the woods and running around. Depending on the terrain that you're using, trekking poles are also very commonly used. And so, one, just knowing that the gear demands might be a little bit different. And then two, you know, investing in some of that gear, if it were appropriate or something that you wanted to tackle a little bit more, will make you maybe seem a little less like that fish out of water if you show up with some trail shoes versus, you know, your Nike Vaporflies or something as you show up for the woods.
Yeah, so Jason, as you were racing the Hurt 100 just shortly ago, and as you're training on trails, what gear is different for you from when you go out for a road run?
Obviously, like EJ was just saying, you know, you got your hydration pack, you got your trekking poles, you know, you could have gaiters. Those are basically covering your shoe, the top of your shoe, so dirt doesn't get into them. You know, and then obviously your trail shoes. And, you know, speaking how you said when you could be a fish out of water, but you all, like you're saying, there's so many friendly people. It's the nicest environment out there and so laid back where they're not worried about, they're not looking down at their pace. They're not, you know, how much power am I pushing out? They just like to run and enjoy that feeling. So they're, you know, being coming from the triathlon side and you're looking at your watch and worried about your pace, you know, they could definitely tell the newbie in that. But you'll have all sorts of people, from the person who's just got a pair of trail shoes on, a pair of shorts, and carrying a water bottle in his hand, and to the person that's got the pack with the full hydration and trekking poles. And, you know, just the biggest thing is what works for you and making sure you've tested out that gear before, you know, you're on your first race. Don't all of a sudden be like, hey, somebody said I should use trekking poles, and you buy them and just show up to that race and have never used them and don't have any, you know, any experience with them. You know, you're going to struggle and your arms are going to be sore. And, you know, definitely whatever gear you have for your runs, test it out and make sure you're comfortable with it and it works for you.
Now, when you head out the door, and I'm taking a slight diversion here from our notes, but while we're kind of talking about gear a little bit, when you head out the door just for a training run, you know, you're both introducing us to some of the things that we can use in trail running. I imagine you don't always need gaiters. You don't always need trekking poles. There's probably some runs that's beneficial, some runs where it's not. How much are you varying what you're using in those training runs versus are there certain things you're always using because it's a trail run and it's just good to use a hydration pack or a handheld water bottle or whatever? Speak to that a little bit, even both of you. I'll go Verby and Elizabeth on what you use all the time versus what you use if the terrain calls for it.
My all the time, and it doesn't matter if I'm on an hour run or a 3-hour trail run, I always have my hydration pack and always bring water, just so I'm always used to that being on my back and comfortable and carrying the water back there. And for some reason, I always think, what if something happens to me on that trail and I'm not accessible, right? You know, if I'm running on the street by my house or around the house, if something, I slip off the curb and God forbid, break my ankle or something, I know there's going to be a car going by.
Yeah,
call on my phone. Somebody can get very quickly. But if I'm out on a trail somewhere and I get hurt, I could be there a while before I drag myself out, for one, or somebody comes and helps me. So I always want to make sure I have water and some kind of little, I have carry always a little first aid kit with just some necessities with me, just in case something happens out there and I'm out there for a little while. And then if I know I'm going to be using my trekking poles in my, you know, next upcoming race, I almost always bring them with me just so I'm training with them and working the muscles in my arm and, you know, having my body used to that. Same, you know, I don't want anything new on race day. So even if it's a short run, but I know I'm going to be doing some climbing and I'm going to be using trekking poles during my race, then I'm out there training with those just so I have that experience and I'm used to it and got that technique down that I'm flying up that hill and flying down the hill using those poles.
Yeah. So Elizabeth, same question over to you. I mean, how much is it different each time you run versus things that you always take with you no matter what?
Very similar to what Coach Furby said. I would say that I am rather directionally challenged. So if I can print off a map of where I'm going, I will always do that as well. Because yeah, you get out there and sometimes you don't have cell phone service. I think that's also why I always top off the water and have a snack, because it's not as easy to navigate sometimes out there, and I have been known to miss a turn and get lost and turn a shorter run into a much longer run. So I always make sure that I'm prepared with, yeah, food, water, map, cell phone, for when I can get back to service, and then that first aid kit too. You know, there's just things where rocks, roots, like you might fall and just bump your knee, but still being able to clean that out, put a Band-Aid over it is a great thing kind of mid-run. Unlike Coach Verby, I don't use trekking poles often. And I think that has a lot to do with the terrain that I have around here. There isn't a lot of need for me to use the trekking poles. We don't have a whole lot of elevation change. It's something that, like, I wish that I would have had them for some of the events that I've been pacing. Out in, like, Utah, out in Leadville, Colorado. And so that's something that is on the list of, like, I need to learn this, but I also need to find a place to really put those into practice and in a practical way. So for me, that isn't something that I bring out there often. I've only tried them once. I don't even own them. And so it's more focused on, do I have the right shoes, making sure that I have a little bit of a backup, just because it's not as predictable in terms of food, water, directions as it would be if I'm just headed out the door for a neighborhood jog.
So Elizabeth, earlier when you were talking about how you got into trail running, and you just talked about how magical the experience is being out on the trails. I think it takes a very rare person to describe a track session as being magical, right? A track session is kind of just a track session. The only changing variables for a track session are what's the temperature? Is it windy? Is it sunny? Is it rainy? Other than that, the track is the track. But every time you go into nature to run on trails, you know, you're out there, the elements are different, the trails are different, the wildlife is different, the scenery is different, the terrain is different. Talk to us about just the connection that trail runners have with the wilderness, with that sense of adventure and that sense of being out in nature that is so different from road running.
Absolutely, yeah. Trail runners have kind of this deep connection to nature, and will often have a leave no trace mentality. And so one of the things that I think sticks out quite a bit from the trail running community is that they are very adamant about following proper trail etiquette by staying on designated trails, you know, not going off the path, then ruining, some of the delicate plants that can be in nature off of the trails. Always making sure to pick up after yourself, not littering, and then respecting the wildlife too. Again, just, you know, if there's a bird nest there, you leave it alone. You know, if there's an animal on the trail, like, you don't necessarily have the right of way. You are kind of the invader here, and really just wanting to respect the, not only the plants, but the animals that live out in the spaces that we have the opportunity to really visit while we're out there. I think that that's just a really neat aspect of trail running is this connection with nature and the appreciation for what's out there.
Elizabeth, what's some of the nature you've seen out on some of your trail runs that you've done?
Yeah, no, this is quite a long list. Snakes, moose, elk, bear, bobcats.
Where did you see a bear?
Up in Alaska. Now I'll have to think of what else I've seen. I mean, deer too. Quite a few encounters. Some a little closer than others, but yeah. All good stories coming out of it.
Coach Verby, any memorable wildlife encounters for you?
Bears, moose. I can remember specifically at Alaska Man, and they wore, you know, we had to wear bear bells and have bear spray just in case. And, you know, I was getting close to finishing my race, and I'm coming down the trail, and me and my pacer, all of a sudden we saw some big bear and some cubs. And they had warned us, like, hey, if there's a bear on the trail, the race could be stopped. And, you know, we're not going to mess with that. And my pacer, he has his phone out. He's recording it like it's the coolest thing. And I'm like, it looks like that bear is going to be crossing our trail and we're going to have to stop. And I was in so much pain. I just wanted to finish. And I'm like, put the camera away. We got to go. I'm not stopping the race now. I'm in pain. I want this to end. And he's laughing and filming. And I mean, I was kind of so out of it. The bear wasn't even going close to where we were going. Yeah. He was going, he was going on my trail where I needed to go finish the race and we had to go. So yeah, that was one of my big ones. And another time I was out running a trail by my house and I was practicing at nighttime because I knew my race, I was going to be in the dark. And I was on the trail and I heard a big, deep growl. And I was about 5 miles out in the mountains. I, to this day, have no idea what it was.
Oh, boy.
Because I heard a growl and then I heard like trampling off into the bush. Let's just say probably my fastest pace I've ever ran in my life because I didn't know if it was coming after me or not. It could have literally been a squirrel growling at me, but it sounded like the biggest dinosaur chasing me, and I was gone. I was out of there.
When I go run the mountain bike trails near my house, like, we're not super immersed in wilderness. It's a lake, like, with a bunch of suburbs around it, but there are very wide-ranging extremities to the wildlife you can get yourself into with trail events, trail training, running on trails. So Coach Verby, you've done this all over the world. What do athletes need to consider, and what do they need to research about the trail they're about to go potentially run on as they're looking at how developed is this? How remote is this? What do I need to do to stay safe? What do I need to do to be prepared once I get out there? Talk to us a little bit about just the wide ranges of remoteness and proximity to towns and whatnot you will get into on trails.
Yeah, like you said, definitely know where you're going and know, you know, the terrain. Another big thing is, you know, for me, like trail running, so it could be 80 at my house. I'm in shorts and a t-shirt. I go up in the mountains and there's still snow on the top. So, and then you're getting storms. So, you know, knowing what the weather's going to be up there, having the, you know, windbreaker, rain jacket, some gloves, you know, that can change in an instant up in the mountains. You know, so really knowing everything you possibly can, researching about where you're going to run, the time of day, what the weather's going to be is huge. Yeah, I can't say that more. This just for your safety. And again, knowing, you know, having, if you're going out by yourself, let somebody know the route you're going to be on and kind of when you're going to be done. Cause like Elizabeth said, you can get lost out there. It's very, very easy. If all of a sudden you take a different path and it looks like the main one, but it might not be, in the next thing you're like, and you have no cell phone service, like, where am I? You know, letting somebody know, this is where I'm planning on going. This is the time I'm supposed to be back. You know, those are keys to helping you, you know, stay alive, you know, if they have to send out a search party, God forbid. But, you know, it's not just your training in a town where it's easy to find yourself, you know, it's, you're on the elements at times. So definitely prepare for something bad could happen and make sure you have a plan.
This is one of the other things that I love too, is there's such a wide variety. Like, you can go to a dirt path mountain bike trail and get a fantastic trail run in, or you can, you know, venture into some mountainous terrain and really work on, you know, an adventure off the beaten path. There's a wide variety of opportunities. And if you're just getting started, you might want to tackle something more like a mountain bike path that's nearby, something that's well marked, that's traveled by others, so that, I mean, if you do get a little bit turned around, you probably have other company out there to help, you know, redirect you back to the parking lot. There is also just this increased interest in trail running. And so I see, even in the DFW community here, a lot of groups that are getting together for trail runs, I mean, 3 or 4 times a week. So, yeah. You know, you can do it on a Tuesday, Thursday evening. You can go out on Saturday or Sunday, and you can have the opportunity to explore some of those trails and be familiar not only with the terrain, the paths, you know, learn a little bit more about the gear. And so it's something that, just depending on your comfort level, you can find something that is well suited to your needs. And if you get more and more comfortable and feel ready to take on a grander adventure, then those opportunities are always there too. But it's not something that, you know, everybody should worry about getting lost or stuck in the mountains or face to face with a bear on their first time out there. You know, those things do exist, but you kind of have to choose that adventure too. And if you're going to the local mountain bike path, very unlikely that you would have a scary encounter like that as you get into trail running.
So let's talk about like the training itself. So for a triathlete interested in trail running, you know, how different is the muscle groups we'll be working on the trails versus pavement? Elizabeth.
Trail running and, you know, running on the pavement, they work very similar muscle groups. Where we see a difference is the intensity and the impact on those muscle groups. And I'll give you a couple examples here. So like with the quads, both trail running and running on pavement rely heavily on the use of the quadricep muscles to propel the body forward. However, trail running may challenge the quads a little bit more due to the added like terrain changes. So you have, you know, probably more incline, decline, you have the uneven terrain. Same thing like with the glutes. So you're going to use your glutes on, you know, any run that you do, but trail running may engage them a little bit more because you have to have that stability and balance on some of the uneven surfaces. And that's where I think I see the biggest difference. Again, the ankles, you know, the muscles in the feet. Trail running is typically going to involve more unpredictable and uneven surfaces. And so that's just going to activate the muscles differently than you probably would on a typical neighborhood run. And so having, you know, the strength and stability of all those little muscles to help you stabilize and keep moving forward is probably going to show up more on the trails than it does for a neighborhood jog. And this is something that, like, I definitely feel. Even though those same muscle groups are utilized, I come back from a trail run and the next day I'm like, ooh, those little stabilizer muscles that like I needed a little bit more as I'm going up and down and sideways and, you know, making maybe some more lateral steps than just a forward step all of the time are being utilized. So the, you know, the same major muscle groups are going to be hit in any running that you do. But I think there is a greater demand just because of the stability requirements on the trail.
Yeah, no, totally makes sense. And I'm like you, when I do go trail running, I probably go a handful of times a year. And that's exactly the two things I notice differently for me on training on trails as opposed to going down to the track or going around the neighborhood are those stabilizer muscles. I'm not any more sore than a regular session. I'm just sorer in some of those stabilizing muscles. And the other thing I notice is different when I run trails is you have to be mentally engaged the entire time. Like you can't check out and just like daydream and let your mind wander. Maybe if you're a little bit more skilled than I am, you can, but you're every time your foot is hitting the ground, you're having to focus on where is that foot going? Because there's roots, there's rocks, there's uneven terrain, there's weird steps. And so there's stretches where it's maybe a little calmer, a little bit more stable, and you can kind of check out. But for the most part, I have to mentally stay a lot more engaged trail running than I do when I'm just clocking laps at a certain pace around the track. Jason, what do you notice in your training for trail events versus your training for road events? What's happening differently in your muscles on those sessions?
Yeah, you two hit it on the head exactly. Like, especially that one, Andrew, where you can't just zone out on running through the neighborhood. It's easy. It's it's flat pavement. You might have to worry about going up and down a curb once in a while, that, you know, that, or there's a little crack in the sidewalk. But like you said, you've got to stay alert that whole time. Where's your foot landing? Where, you know, I'm doing a step up onto a rock. Am I going over a rock? Am I running down a steep hill and it's on rock and it's a little sandy? You know, are you cautious because it's slippery? So your stride's changing. And like Coach EJ was saying, and you, Andrew, all those little stabilizing muscles, your feet are never pushing off a complete flat surface like you are on the road. So your ankle could be bent just a little bit to an angle one way or the other way. And that's hitting those muscles, just a little tweaking them, just a little different than you're used to, and working them on. You get done and you're like, oh, wow, I really worked those. You're not feeling it. And I know one of the big ones for me too is, depending on how steep your terrain is, really working your calves. If you're going up those steep hills and you may be just on your tiptoes pushing off, climbing these hills. And if they're soft sand, you're sliding down a little bit. And my calves, a lot of times when I don't run for trails for a while and then go run some steep stuff, my calves are on fire just from that kind of climbing up, or even climbing on the rocks and kind of pushing off and being on the balls of my feet, pushing off with my toes more than you definitely do on a road run. And then even the running down the steep hills, that pounding on the quads, they take a good beating from just that added weight hitting it, compared to, again, running on the road. And, you know, most roads aren't going down at a 20% incline where you could get that out on a steep trail run.
For me, the other thing that's really telling is my posture with a hydration pack. Like, if I let my posture fall and I've got that hydration pack on, my back and my shoulders are sore the next day.
Interesting.
And so it's not even necessarily, you know, the demands of the trail, but the gear that I'm wearing. And so that's something too, that like, if I know I'm preparing for an event, I'm always going to wear that trail pack so that I'm aware of how I'm carrying my upper body, making sure that my shoulders are still stacked on top of my hips so that I'm not hunched over, because I can tell that the next day immediately. Sometimes my upper body is more sore than the lower body just because of the gear.
My next question about training on trails for triathletes like me, who maybe aren't as used to it as the two of you, especially our Tridot athletes in the audience, you know, you have a usually a specific run workout that Tridot is giving you for that day. And when you have a certain workout to do in your training regimen, can trails be a conduit, be a method for getting that workout done? Or do they just obliterate your workout? And when you are doing a trail run, you're just conceding, okay, I'm skipping the workout today to put it on trails. Talk to us about that mix for the triathlete. You've got your structured training, you've got the workouts you're supposed to do. Can running on trails jive with the workout schedule, or does it just totally not? How can we fit this into our training? Coach Verby.
First, if your race is going to be on trails, then definitely suggest training on trails also. But if you just love trails and your race isn't going to be, you know, your next race isn't going to be on trails, you definitely can include it in there, especially if you enjoy it. You don't want to take out what you enjoy. I always try to still do my speed work on the, on pavement in the neighborhood, and I'll make my zone two or my long runs on a trail. And I'll just, some trails are fairly flat and, you know, just through the woods or whatever. But I'll just try to switch it and go off heart rate, which a lot of time our zone two runs are off heart rate, or, you know, can be with our long runs where we may have a little bit of zone three, but I'll just stick to the heart rate and just monitor that and kind of go by my perceived effort also. And that way I'm out on the trail, still having fun, enjoying it, giving it a little, you know, it's always good to change it up a little bit, but that way you're still doing what you love and you're getting your training in.
Yeah, I always joke on the podcast, you know, you got your TrainX score for how well you executed your session, but sometimes it's worth it to take a slight hit in your TrainX score to increase your FunX score and make sure that you're breathing some life into your training. And I love the track. I love running at the track more than anything else. But yeah, it is a nice breath of fresh air, literally, to get on the trail sometimes and changed it up a little bit. Elizabeth, for your athletes, kind of what do you coach them here when it comes to doing your training, doing the structured training, but taking it to the trails?
Well, I love how you have at least one question where we can give our standard, you know, answer of it depends.
Yeah,
because
got to.
That's where it fits here. So, you know, appreciate you putting that in there for us. But it really does. It depends. And when we're talking about compromising the quality of your training, I think there's a couple things that we need to look at. Are we compromising, you know, the quality of your overall fitness? Are we compromising specific triathlon race preparation? And as Coach Furby said, like, if you are, you know, planning to race something that is on trails, yes, you absolutely need to be training on trails. If you are preparing for a triathlon, but you absolutely love running on trails, then that enjoyment factor is huge. And we want to, you know, continue to incorporate things that make triathlon a lifestyle that you enjoy and something that's sustainable. Trail running can be incorporated. I think one of the things that I enjoy most about trail running is not worrying about the pace or the power that I'm, you know, following. And so using metrics like perceived exertion and heart rate to monitor your effort on trails is very appropriate, because it's going to be a very different terrain than if you were to go out and do something at the track. And so, as Coach Furby was saying, you know, those heart rate runs are a fantastic way to incorporate some different, you know, paths. Put a trail run in there. As long as you're sticking to that zone 2 heart rate, you know, you might be getting a little bit more muscular fatigue than you would from a neighborhood run, but you're still, you know, allowing that same response from the body because of how hard your heart is working and taxing the cardiovascular system in a similar way to what you would be doing on the road for that zone 2 run. It's something where I incorporate it a lot more in the off season than I do when I get into a race specific like training phase. In the development phase, if I, you know, have the opportunity to go out and do some zone 2 running on the trail, for me, that's just fun and it's enjoyable. But when I'm getting closer and closer to a triathlon race, I am less likely to go to the trails, one, because I want that preparation to be very specific. But two, like, I personally start getting a little worried about, you know, the rocks and the roots and the possibility of falling.
That's
real. And so I'm like, you know, risk reward at this point, like, if I'm 4 weeks out from a triathlon race, you probably are not going to find me on the trails at that point either.
Yep. And that exactly mirrors my approach. I'm glad, Elizabeth, that you mentioned just going more off of your heart rate and your RPE as opposed to paying attention to pace and power. That's a struggle for me when I first started doing trails every so often, because I'm used to, you know, going down to the track or going around the neighborhood and seeing that nice, tidy, lower number on my average pace. And you go out on trails and, you know, I felt like I was working really hard. And I felt like, okay, I'm going to look down and I'm going to see my normal 7.5 minute mile pace. And I would look down and see 10:30. I'm like, what do you mean I'm only going 10:30? Like, what? Yeah, and you totally have to let go of that. You totally have to let go of average pace, current pace, all that jazz. I mean, if you're racing, maybe it's different. We'll talk about that here in a second. But racing trails, we know the culture is different. The races are also very different from going down and pulling up to a triathlon. So Elizabeth, walk us through what a trail race event is like, particularly pointing out some differences from what we're used to seeing at triathlons.
Some key aspects of trail races. I mean, obviously from the name, you know that a trail race is going to take place on more of like a natural surface. It can be challenging, unpredictable, you know, you're navigating rocky or muddy terrain, steep hills, uneven ground. And that's really kind of like the essential element that is one of the biggest differentiators between a road race and a trail race is the terrain itself. Then when we get into a little bit more of the logistics for it, oftentimes trail races have fewer aid stations along the course compared to road races. And most of the time, this is just because the terrain can make it very difficult for race organizers to access points to put those aid stations. However, when you do have an aid station, it's usually very well stocked with water, sports drinks, snacks. On the longer races, you'll see a whole lot more real food options than maybe what triathletes may be used to seeing at events. And it's something where, again, the gear that the trail runners will have makes them prepared to go a little bit longer from aid station to aid station. It's not going to be like your triathlon events where you've got an aid station every mile or so. It could be 15 miles until you get to the next aid station. And so you really need to make sure that you have hours worth of fueling and hydration available to you and really plan for how you're going to get from one aid station to the next.
Hey, Verbi, when Elizabeth says that there's more real food options at the at the aid stations, what real food is she talking about? What are you seeing out there at the trail events?
Oh, gosh. They have, depending the time of day, like the long event, like her 100, it was a 36-hour time limit on it. So, I mean, there were pancakes at breakfast time. There's quesadillas. And there's chicken broth. There's burritos. You name it. They had so much different options out there for you. And like Elizabeth was saying, then it's just you need that. Your body can, for me anyways, it can only do so many gels or so many kind of drinks. Like, you want something solid, potatoes to some broth, something in there, especially at night when it cools down, you all of a sudden you're getting something warm, some kind of warm food. It's just, I mean, that can change your spirits huge. So, I mean, those big races, they have a variety of everything.
Yeah, this might be the aspect of trail running that I can get behind the most and probably where we as triathlon
the
events.
Buffet.
Yeah, can learn a little bit from the trail community. Elizabeth, sorry to interrupt your list there. I had to hear a little bit more about the real food options.
All good.
What else is different about a trail race and how these functions pass the wonderful buffet aid stations?
Well, we've talked a little bit about how, like I will try to carry a map with me, or at least an outline of the trail where I'm going. In some trail races, runners are required to kind of navigate the course on their own. And so, they will try to mark the course in a lot of the events that I've been in. But also, if you're going out and you're doing a 100-mile event, you're not going to have it marked at, every couple hundred feet. It might be a couple miles, and then you see another little ribbon that is just a reminder of, okay, good, yep, we're on the right track. I know that, as I'm pacing for events, one of my jobs now is to really say out loud when we see those course markings. And so it's like, yep, orange ribbon, we're on the right track. This is good. Just confirming that we are not yet lost.
Yeah.
And in case we haven't seen one in a while, then it's time to pull the map back
it's
out and confirm.
That peace of mind for your athlete that you're pacing, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I think one of the other things that is somewhat unique is that trail races will often take place in more extreme weather conditions, and not necessarily purposefully, but unlike road races that may be canceled for weather events, trail races are more likely to go forward with that. Now, again, it's not to a point of, putting anybody in danger, but also if you have runners that are spread out over 100 miles and there's a small pop-up lightning storm that comes, they're not necessarily going to cancel the entire event for everybody that's on the course. One of the last events that I paced for, it was on the Mogollon Rim in Arizona. And in the athlete guide, they had very specific instructions for what to do if you are caught in a lightning strike.
Wow.
It wasn't, hey, if there's a lightning strike, we're going to cancel it. It's like, no. If you are encountering one of these pop-up, storms, know the crouch position so that the strike can travel quickly through your feet back to the ground. And so those are things that, are very different as well. That if there's, lightning anywhere in the area for a triathlon, typically it's canceled.
Yeah,
or they try to clear everybody from the course. That's not the same here. And again, not to put anybody in danger, but to really let the runners know that if you are out in a remote location and everybody is spread through miles and miles of the race, it might not feasibly be possible for them to cancel the race and get everybody to safety. And so that's, again, where having all of the gear for the different types of weather condition is essential. And I know we talked about gear a little bit before too, but things come up. So having, your bug spray and things to treat insect bites, having flashlights and, lights to, illuminate the trail when it gets dark. All of those things are a part of trail races that a lot of triathletes don't need to consider in an event like we might be more used to.
Coach Verby, there's been a couple times Elizabeth has alluded to being a pacer at these events for another athlete. And one of the things that's really fascinating to me that's different from a triathlon is kind of the culture of the relationship between the athlete and their pacer, the athlete and their crew, the crew taking care of the athlete. You'll see athletes rolling into, it's not a transition area. It's kind of like a crew kind of hub area where the athlete comes from the town and they're being changed. They're being fed food by their crew and just all this stuff, almost like a little pit stop. Talk to us, Jason, just about that side of trail racing where you, the athlete, are relying on a team to get you to the finish line and how all of that works.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most relevant. Usually the longer the race, the pacers are allowed and your support crew, and it's huge. I mean, the pacer is, you got a friend with you. I mean, what better when you're going through a dark spot than to have somebody there with you who knows you and can help you get through that dark spot? Or again, like Elizabeth was saying, she points out that there's a trail marker because, you know, you're at 24 hours and you got race brain going on, and all of a sudden you look and you're like, am I on the right trail? And your mind goes, oh my God, we haven't seen a marking in 6 hours. You know, it goes to the extreme and you start freaking out. And where's the next marker? Am I in the right spot? Well, you know, thankfully you have somebody with you to, you know, point out that you're on the right spot, or you can just almost zone out and say, I just got to follow Coach EJ's feet. That's all I'm looking at is her feet. And just, this is, I got my faith in her to get me to where I need to go. So that, I mean, it's huge for you. And then, like you said, coming into the aid station where your crew is at, again, seeing some friendly faces, you know, they having your favorite things ready for you. They may be, you know, your feet may be hurting. They may be taking your shoes off, popping some blisters, bandaging up for you while you're taking in food. Like you said, it's like NASCAR pit crew. Somebody could be feeding you. Somebody could be tending to your feet. Somebody could have a massage gun, massaging your legs, you know, putting fresh socks on you then, putting shoes on, lifting you up. All right, time to get back out there. You know, you were there 5 minutes, but four people were doing four different things to you, and you're ready to continue on. And all you had to sit there is open your mouth, chew the food, and sit back and let them do their job. So, I mean, that can change your spirits just knowing, you know, you haven't seen any, you know, the trails are lonely at times. There's not people lining the trails cheering you on every mile. You may not see anybody for hours, and then knowing, hey, wow, in half a mile, my crew is there waiting for me.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Excited. It gets you, it keeps you pushing on. One, knowing, well, I don't want to let my crew down. They've given up their day. They've given up their weekend to be out here with me. They're waiting for me. I'm not going to slow down. I'm not going to quit. They're there for me. So just that in general, just, I mean, it's like nothing other.
So Jason, for our listeners who they've heard us talk about how to train on trails, they've heard about the culture, they've heard about how the events are different from triathlon. If someone is interested in trying a trail race, Verby, what are some of the resources they should go check out in terms of just finding? I think we all know for triathlon, right, that you go to your local event producer, or you go to Ironman for Ironman events, you go to Challenge, Family Clash, whatever it is, you go to their websites. You know, we all know how to find the tri events. You know, how do you even find where the closest trail events are to you and get to the start line in the first place?
Well, kind of the same way. We got this great thing now, the internet. And
yeah.
you type in local area ultra races or trail races, and boom, the list will come up. And again, if all of a sudden you get with a trail running group, I mean, word of mouth, they start talking about different runs they've done. And again, Facebook has many different ultra running, trail running groups, and you can find little groups in your area. And the one good thing that's kind of going back to where we were before is, you know, how much they they're with the environment. And, you know, the one thing too is when you look for these events, just know too, a lot of them now are requiring you to go and do trail work, kind of giving back, making sure the trails are good, that kind of leave no trace, and you're trimming things. So a lot of these races now are even want you to be more environmentally friendly and knowing, you know, getting in with the group and giving back. And you have so many hours of trail work you have to do before you can even enter that race or be in that race of giving back to the community. That's a big part of it. So just when you're looking for a race, make sure you're reading about the race and all the kind of requirements for that, because that is a big one that's been out there now too.
So last question for today, I just want to hear from the both of you. All of your trail running adventures, you've done this much more than I have in some stunning locations. Just leave us very quickly today with one really, really great trail running memory. EJ.
One of the things that we've kind of mentioned throughout is how I've had the opportunity to pace at a number of these longer distance trail events. The trail races that I've done myself have been much shorter. I have not been at a distance where I've required a pacer yet. Someday
yet.
We'll get there.
Yeah, yet.
Yes, but right now I'm focused more on the triathlon stuff, but still take every advantage that I have been offered to be a pacer. And this probably favorite memory comes from pacing at the Leadville 100, and it is snowing. But somehow, despite all the precipitation in the air, the stars are so bright. We are Wow. so high up in the mountains that you feel like the stars are close enough that you could touch them. Mark, who's the racer, and I are just freezing cold, absolutely shivering. We are out of breath from the altitude, and yet, like, just that feeling of being so alive. For me, this is just a standout memory because it is a feeling that it like has not been replicated yet. Just pushing your body in the beauty of nature with your close friends, that's just something that like I will always remember and cherish.
Yeah, chills. Yeah, just super chills. Just hearing that. Yeah, I can picture it somewhat, right? But you got to be there to see it, and definitely a moment you'll never forget. Coach Furby, what is this answer for you?
Well, I'm going to go to... I've got so many. I had a couple really good ones, but I'm going to go to the Hurt 100, the last, okay. You know, my most recent race, and kind of tying in everything how we talked all day about. And so I'm out on lap one and I'm going, and I kind of feel chest protector. I'm thinking motocross here. My heart rate strap was kind of sliding down. And so I went to adjust it and it snapped in half. On 2-something hours into my 36 hour or, you know, time limit adventure 100-mile race, it split at the seams. My heart rate monitor split at seams, and well, my whole race was going off of my heart rate. But it honestly, I got scared for a second going, uh oh, and then I'm like, we could just go off field. And I felt such a huge relief that I was just started running off field, watching what I was doing, you know, enjoying, you know, looking out, you know, we're getting on some of these mountains in Hawaii, and I can see Waikiki on one way, and I can look over the other way and see Kaneohe Bay and just the beautiful jungle. And, you know, it took a lot of pressure off looking down at my watch. And so then I was just kind of going by, all right, you know, I would take a drink every 10 minutes and just trying to stay on top of my hydration. Well, on my third lap, I looked down at my watch and my watch is shut off.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
It just turned off. Yeah. And I know I have plenty of battery still. So again, I was like, do I really need my watch? No. So again, it was just, you know, going off a feel, just enjoying the moment. And I mean, this was a very big race for me that I put a lot of time in, and also my two key elements, how I'm supposed to be tracking what I'm doing, are gone. And it was like a weight taken off my shoulders.
Wow.
And I just enjoyed and got to just go. My watch did magically turn back on. I you know, I can see on Strava that magically uploaded at 47 miles. So I wasn't even halfway through the race, but it turned on, but I didn't even restart it. All I would do is just look at the time and kind of where I was. I didn't start, you know, I didn't start any tracking again. I just let it be, looked at the clock. That way I knew when to take a drink. But other than that, those two weights were gone. And I just enjoyed the 35 hours. I get the, you know, I just got to enjoy it as much as enjoying as I had. It did hurt. But, you know, that going back to everything we said of just going by pace and getting to feel out with the elements. I mean, that is in my mind, you know, one that's going to go down for one of my greatest.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Hi, friends. I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. And joining us today for the Coach Cooldown Tip is Mandy Starling. Mandy works full-time in internal marketing and communications. She also mentors clients on emotional, mental, and physical health through body mapping and as a breathwork facilitator. On the side, Mandy started coaching with TriDot as she loves sharing knowledge she has gained having completed over 130 races within the last 10 years. Mandy loves coaching people starting out on their triathlon journey, and her specialty is short course racing and emotional health. Mandy currently lives in Utah with her husband, who she describes as the man of her dreams, and they have a blended family with 10 children and 3 grandchildren. Welcome to the cool down, Mandy.
Hi, Vanessa. Thanks so much for having me today. I am really excited to be here.
Awesome. Well, something most people don't know about you is that you are an author, which is so cool. So Tell me about your work.
Sure. So I've had a few articles published over the years. The first was when I was in my undergrad program. I wrote this article for single moms to help them get through college because I had just gone through that process myself and learned about all these resources that are available that most single moms didn't know about. So that was published in a local magazine here in Utah. And then during grad school and then in my professional career, I've also had a few research articles published. One was about internal communication in federal government settings. And then another one was this really cool project I got to be a part of digitizing and making available a bunch of works by German women. And during the time that they were published, they all had to use fake names because at the time, women were not allowed to publish content in Germany. So this collection was fantastic. It was a really amazing project to be part of.
Wow, that's really cool. It sounds like you're a really giving person who's invested in situations, and you like to, you know, share the knowledge that you've gained for other people, you know, like just from having gone through this experience in through college with being a single mom, and then and now you're wanting to be a triathlon coach because you've gained all this knowledge and you just want to share. And I just love that. What a great gift that you have.
Thank you. Yeah, sometimes I feel like a sponge. I just learn all of these cool things, but then I just want to share it with everybody so they can have a better life.
Yeah, well, let's get to the sharing. Let's share the tip triathlon love. So what do you have for us today?
Yes. So my specialty is working on emotions, and I want to emphasize that emotions are a little different than mental. A lot of us are well aware of mental toughness, mental strength, mental health, but emotions are their own kind of thing. And they can really impact your training and your racing. And as I've done this and gone through this, I've had so many people who said, man, I had this big race coming up and a week before I got injured and I didn't even know if I was going to be able to race. Or 2 days before the race, I got really sick and I didn't know if I was going to be able to race. And, you know, these are athletes who are in tip-top shape. But the more I've learned about emotions, the more I've learned that they can actually be the culprit of a lot of the illnesses and injuries that we get. So let me explain that a little bit. Emotions are energy in motion. Every emotion you have has energy with it. In fact, in about 2016, MIT researchers created this device called the EQ radio, and it measures the vibrational frequency of every emotion. It's really cool. And so the more positive the emotion, the higher the vibration, and then the lower the more negative the emotion, the lower the vibrational frequency. And there's been a lot of additional research that has taken a look at how these vibrational frequencies affect our bodies. And the more low vibrational frequencies can more easily put you in a state of illness and injury, while the high vibrational frequencies keep you healthy. Your body and your cells really like those high vibrations. So, and just letting you know, shame is the lowest vibrational frequency of any of the emotions. followed closely by apathy and guilt. And then for the highest vibrational frequencies, those are love, joy, peace, and enlightenment. So all those happy things. So if you're beating yourself up about not doing well in a race or not doing well in a workout, you're creating emotions that are creating a low vibrational frequency in your body, and you're more likely to get sick or injured. Whereas if you give yourself, you know, love, hey, I did the best I could, I'm happy with it, this is great, then you're going to be more likely to recover quickly from that and be able to keep racing. So how do you let go of these negative, low vibrational frequency emotions? Because as we're growing up, as I was growing up, people would say, oh, just let it go. And after, you know, into my 20s, I was like, well, what does that even mean? Just let it go. Can you demonstrate? Can you give me a formula or a pattern or something? I don't know what that means. And so nobody really taught me how to let emotions go in a way that worked. So I've been studying that for the last several years. And one of the techniques that I found that resonates with athletes the most is what I like to call the full body crunch. So it's really quick and easy, which is another reason I love it. So here's what you do. For 20 seconds, you're going to set a timer for 20 seconds. That's it. And you're going to get into a tight ball and just focus on tensing every single muscle you can in your body. And you're going to hold it for 20 seconds. And you're going to think about that emotion, whether it's anger or frustration or guilt or shame, and just push that into every tensed muscle in your body. Hold it for 20 seconds and then whoosh, just let it all go. And you feel this release of that emotion. Sometimes you might have to do it a couple of times, but it can make you dizzy. So don't try to stand up too fast right after doing it. You might want some water. But yeah, 20 seconds, and that will help you to release that emotion.
Okay, I have a question about that, because you said take the emotion that you're feeling and magnify it in this physical sense. What happens if you don't actually know what emotion you're feeling? I know that for me, sometimes I know I feel like I'm in this negative, low vibration, as you described it, but I don't actually know how to verbalize or, you know, put a name to that emotion. Is there a way that you can do this without knowing the emotion that you need to process?
Yes, definitely. So some of us are really visual, and it's easy for us to picture something in our mind, and some of us are more verbal. So if you're more of a visual person, then you can picture whatever comes to your mind first, a shape and a color to represent whatever it is you're feeling. So maybe it comes up as a black spiky ball or something like that. Then you can picture having that black spiky ball, and when you release it, you release that black spiky ball. If you're more of a verbal person, then you might have to say it out loud, like, I am feeling just like garbage right now. And you just try to verbalize whatever it is you're feeling. However, it feels kind of like anger, or it feels just like, I feel like a puddle on the ground right now, or something like that, to put it into what you're doing.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.